In Latvia, politicians fight over refugee resettlement plan. They discuss cutting benefits, how to integrate these people. How is it in the other countries in this region?
I mean, the decisions that have been adopted by the EU institutions have been preceded by intense discussions between EU member states on how to best deal with this urgent situation. And in these discussions, I mean, various views and concerns have been expressed by states. All states in these discussions recognize that the situation presents many challenges, first and foremost for the refugees and migrants themselves who are risking their lives in order to exercise the human right to seek asylum. But it also presents many challenges for the countries neighboring Syria, who are hosting the absolute majority of the refugees, for Italy and Greece, bordering the European Union and receiving those who arrive by boat on the Mediterranean, and for all of the European countries who are impacted by this protracted Syrian emergency. And, I mean, some states may be less anxious because they have experience in receiving large numbers of refugees and they have established asylum systems and reception and integration programs, while for other states like Latvia that do not have such a long experience of receiving refugees, at least not in larger numbers, there is worry about their capacity to receive and integrate the refugees in a humane and dignified manner, in the spirit of European human rights and humanitarian values. And this worry is understandable and needs to be acknowledged at the same time as efforts need to be undertaken in order to make the countries ready to receive.
And so do you see, is there a huge differences between, say, here in the Baltic Sea region? On one side of the Baltic Sea we have Sweden, and other side we have the Baltic states. Do you see the approaches are different on both sides of the sea here?
I think it comes down to, there is a difference, and it comes down to this point that Sweden, for example, has a long history of receiving, in periods at least, relatively large numbers of asylum seekers and refugees. They have big institutions established for this purpose. There are established integration programs where the different authorities and ministries coordinate and work together, so you have kind of comprehensive integration program. In Latvia, the asylum system is well established. It's been functioning for soon 20 years, and you have very good, experienced, competent officials determining asylum applications. But the integration program is much less established, and therefore we see that some of the worry that may be felt in Latvia is due to a worry that, is Latvia really ready to receive and participate in this program? I mean, UNHCR believes that.
So is it a founded fear or this worry? Is it founded or unfounded about not being or not being ready?
UNHCR presented earlier this year a study about refugee integration opportunities and challenges in Latvia. And that study found that there are many elements of an integration program existing already today, but what is needed is a much stronger cooperation and coordination between the different government authorities and civil society organizations that support integration. So UNHCR believes that with the efforts going on at the moment, Latvia will be ready and to receive. And as with any emergency situation like this, things will not be perfect. But UNHCR believes that with the commitment showed by the government and the efforts going on by civil servants, Latvia will be ready to participate in the European response to this refugee crisis.
What about the attitudes in the society and among the politicians? For example, here in Latvia, among individual politicians, there have been statements about that we should sort of frighten refugees, that we are not a rich country, benefits are low, that Latvians themselves are emigrating because there is no job here, that it is cold here. What do you have to say about such statements?
I mean, the often a common reason why people feel worried and anxious about receiving refugees is because they have not had any or little experience. So it's fear of the other as the other, the stranger. And there, politicians, opinion makers, the media plays an important role in informing the public about why people are fleeing and coming in such great numbers to Europe now. That it is because there is a very protracted conflict, a very serious conflict going on in Syria, and conflicts in other countries like Iraq, Afghanistan, which is causing people to flee, and that the situation in the neighboring countries to where most had first fled has now reached a breaking point. To explain that, and then to really show that what the only thing that distinguishes a refugee from someone who's not a refugee is that they have crossed the international border of their country because they fear persecution or war or conflict. And that is important to educate so that the fear is not based on lack of information. And there I think that the engagement shown by civil society in Latvia over the past months is very impressive and important to build upon, because it shows that Latvia is a hospitable country which is ready to help people in need. It's a humanitarian nation. And these are values that Europe is very much built upon, humanitarian values of democracy and human rights. And there is expressions that Latvia is part of that.
Recently, there has been also discussions here about the benefit amounts. The government is planning to decrease the benefits for refugees. Currently, it's 256 euros a month. Perhaps it's going to be under 200 euros. There's talk even about as low as 130 euros a month. What would be your advice on the benefit amounts? Is there can the levels get dangerously low at some point?
I mean, in this aspect, again, coming back to the study UNHCR presented this year, it showed clearly that what refugees want first and foremost is to find a job and not to be dependent on social benefits and welfare. They want to stand on their own feet and contribute as, you know, tax-paying members of the society. But before they are in a position to do that, they need support in order to learn the language, Latvian language, have their qualifications certified, find housing and so on, because initially refugees will be in a more disadvantaged position than nationals who know the language and the system. And during this period, it is important that they do receive support, social assistance and support, in order to actually facilitate the integration process and not make the refugees go into exclusion and isolation and poverty and hardship because the allowance is so low. Because if they are pushed into a situation of poverty and hardship, it will only delay their integration process and their ability to focus on language learning, finding employment, finding housing. So in this sense, the international standards prescribe that refugees should not be discriminated against vis-a-vis nationals, but they always also put an emphasis on avoiding hardship and providing an adequate level of social welfare and subsistence to refugees.
How long does it realistically take for a person who has got international protection to integrate into local societies? Here in Latvia, all the plans of the government are still quite vague, it seems, but there's talk about 9 months or something.
It's difficult to say an exact time period. It's individual. It depends on the individual. But what UNHCR sees is that by what we call front-loading, by investing at the beginning in good language learning programs, in support to help the newly arrived refugee find housing, accommodation, by really guiding the refugee in how to apply for a job, by trying to match the refugees to, for example, employment opportunities in the private sector. If you invest well in the beginning, it really pays off in the long term. And what is harmful to the integration process and which delays it is often if very little support is provided at the beginning, when the refugee arrives and is very keen to start working, keen to restart, rebuild his or her life. And if he or she is then kept in a situation of being passive, in reception, just waiting and not being active, that can also take away the motivation, which is very important for the person's, you know, commitment to make an effort and to integrate. I mean, when UNHCR meets and speaks with people who have fled their country and come as refugees, like we did in Latvia for this study, all of them say, we want to find a job as quickly as possible. We want to find a job to pay our bills, to stand on our own feet, and to be independent. And they are very eager and motivated to do so. But if it takes a long time, years, many years, to do that, because there is little support in the system, some of that motivation dies, and it takes time to rebuild that again.
The plan is that officials from member states would go and choose refugees in Italy and Greece, and also the refugee camps in the third countries. Latvia has said it wants families, Estonia as well. There's talk about specifically Christian families. Is it okay to set up such criteria? Some have said it resembles a slave trade.
I mean, in this so-called matching process that will take place, where it's decided which applicants are relocated to which countries, specific account will be taken to qualifications and characteristics of the applicants, like their language skills, and demonstrated like family, cultural, social ties that can facilitate integration into a particular member state. And due respect will have to be paid to the principle of non-discrimination. So whilst member states may indicate preferences for applicants based on these factors like language skills, family, social, cultural ties, it cannot include any ethnic or religious or political discrimination. That would be unacceptable. And there, I mean, the UNHCR, our High Commissioner, recently said in an interview in Greece that any statement that only Christians are welcome in Europe can only support the propaganda of extremist groups, because it justifies the propaganda of these groups. So, I mean, if there is something European civilization should be proud of, it's the values of tolerance and understanding the importance of diversity.
How is will UNHCR be involved in this process, and how, for example, will you help Latvian officials to check the backgrounds of refugees, of asylum seekers?
UNHCR will have a specific role when it comes to providing information and counseling to candidates for relocation at these hotspots, but also stand ready to support the governments in counseling and information upon arrival. And there again, I mean, UNHCR has expressed its readiness to support the Latvian authorities in both putting in place integration and reception programs and in providing advice and counseling to those who are relocated to Latvia. I mean, what we have also done is we have advised the European institutions of the importance of ensuring that those who are relocated to Latvia are aware about the conditions and have been matched well, because it's in everyone's interest that the integration process works well. It's in the interest of the refugee and it's in the interest of the Latvian society. But there again, matching will not be done based on grounds that could be considered discrimination.
What are the estimates, say, of UNHCR? How many of the asylum seekers in Italy and Greece will qualify for international protection? And what will happen to the rest?
I mean, the decision from the EU institutions is 160,000. In UNHCR's estimation, this number will be filled, and there will be more needs for more persons to be relocated. This we have said from the beginning. But those who will arrive at these hotspots in Italy and Greece and will not qualify for relocation because they are not from those target nationalities, and who will also not qualify for international protection in the European countries, for those effective and humane return programs will need to be put in place, because that's very important that there is effective and humane return for persons who are not in need of international protection and should not take space in the asylum system.
What is, according to your estimates, what is the makeup of, say, those people who go through the so-called Balkan route? How many of them are really refugees? How many of them are what we call economic migrants here?
I mean, if we look at the figures of those who have arrived to Europe since the beginning of this year, I mean, the majority are from Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Eritrea, I mean, countries in respect of which European states generally recognize them as being in need of international protection. But then there are also other nationalities from the Western Balkans, for example, who are not. But the majority of those who are arriving to Greece and Italy, you know, from using the Mediterranean route, they are from countries from which people flee.
With the war in Syria going on for the fifth year now, and for now it has become even more complicated with Russia entering combat action, amid warnings that this might increase refugee flows, will it happen?
I mean, it is impossible to forecast what will happen in Syria. We see an intensification of the fighting, so we need to be prepared for more Syrians fleeing the country. And we also need to be prepared for a continued high number of Syrians arriving in Europe to seek asylum. But this also, of course, depends on how the situation in the neighboring countries, Turkey, Jordan, Lebanon, and so on, develops, and how much additional humanitarian and development funding they receive in order to be able to provide adequate protection on their territory. Because the reason why now we see this spike, this surge in the number of arrivals to Europe is because many of the Syrians are almost giving up on a political solution after, as you say, 5 years into the conflict. And the situation in the neighboring countries to which they had first fled has reached a breaking point where people are simply not able to find protection anymore. Many are being forced into prostitution, into child labor, exploitation in order to survive. And the third reason is that the humanitarian and development funding from the international community has not been forthcoming, so that these countries in the neighboring region have not been able to provide the support needed.